Well, hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. Joining me, as always, is Steven and Midnight Hatter. Steven, what's up, man?
Not a lot. Hey, I have to, first, before we get into anything, I do want to say thank you for, firing up live late, today. Obviously,
Your
stream schedule has been thrown off. I want you guys to understand that this is not Adam's fault. This is a my fault thing.
Nah, it's cool. You know what? The other thing too is I'm very open to this because I like to get an understanding of how many people can actually join. So it adds to it. And I'm at a point now, I've been doing this for so long and it's so fun. Like I used to be so nervous where it's like, okay, I have to set a time where it's not with family, not with work, so that's what I did that for. But like, I feel so much comfortable just jumping in whenever, so
I'm glad you're not nervous because I'm always nervous. Oh.
No, it's a crazy wild ride. I think this whole thing has been for me. And like, I'm just at a point now where it's so fun. Like I have so much to talk about. Like, I feel like I'm going to do it so fast. I was like, no, Adam, slow down.
But have like an hour.
Yeah. This needs to be 2 hours. Really, if it was, sometimes we kind of like, oh, what should we do next? But no, I mean, because today's show, lots to talk about. I saw the Gundam movie and I want to, of course, everyone has, but in the theaters. So I wanted to talk about that for a second. And then I played Silver Phantom. I can't believe how excited I was about that, how much I was waiting for it, and got to play it a little bit. I have some good thoughts and then some criticisms that are kind of big. The other thing is, when I was doing that like Gunpla build of the week, luckily someone badass and awesome from the community submitted something. So we're going to look at that.
Nice.
So again, I'll let you guys know on the Discord in the Gunpla and Collectibles, there's a pinned comment where it's a form where you can fill out like a custom or any Gunpla you built you're just proud of and you want to talk about it and stuff. So
very cool.
So yeah, what have you been up to recently?
Well, I'm glad you asked because I've got what came out of the old resin workshop, I guess you would call it. So right here I've got I'm sure you guys have seen the ads for it going around, this silly knot stuff. I've got a video review coming out of it because I got to test it for the first time. I made myself a little silicone mold from it and made a resin copy of the, I don't even know what you would call this,
like from, wing.
Yeah, it's from the V8.
It's on the back.
It's like the little energy coil that's in the backpack. I'm sure there's a technical term for it, but it's looking pretty good. There's a couple little bubbles that I missed, but I'm going to just fill those in with UV resin. I think it's going to be cool because we're going to put some LEDs in there. We're going to have this thing light up when it's in firing position. So I'm excited. I have to say, I'm very pleased with how this turned out for a recyclable. Silicone mold.
Yeah, a new technique, like, which is always cool to figure out. Especially it's good sharing it online because you never know how that could take off, It's pretty neat.
This stuff's pretty cool. So yeah. it gets my the Hatter stamp of approval.
that is cool. Of course, yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, just working on Gunpla stuff. You know how it goes. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's like when you got the Zeta Verka before I did, and I'm like, this is where I would go see the Gundam movie in theaters.
If we had one.
Like,
yeah, I'm that's a right.
Jealous of that. Go see that experience. Like,
yeah, exactly. So yesterday that was pretty cool. Last night in my area they happened to have the Gundam movie part one showing. Which I've watched before, after I got into Gundam, I had watched the series and then I tried the trilogy movies because I thought it was interesting to see what they would add, what they would cut. And then I've since then watched it because it would be on Netflix. I just turned it on. I will say though, I 100% prefer the series to the movie. It was cool. My brother said he liked it more than he thought he would. But at the same time, like, if you don't know Gundam and you watch that, they do a very bad job of explaining Char. Because, even at the beginning, remember I did that video this week of Char versus Amuro?
Yeah.
His,
I loved that breakdown, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I love doing stuff like that, and I'm going to be doing a lot more. But the thing is, if I did it from the movie version, I wouldn't have got that much depth because they cut out a lot of his dialogue of it, of understanding where he's at and what he's thinking and then him wanting to retreat. Like, they didn't explain that. And so then I'm thinking, oh, that's actually one. Okay, that's one thing that's cut, is they don't really explain Char's motivations or in that moment, you know, yeah, to really understand. And then so it ends, for, you know, after Garma's death and all that. And it, so it's like by the end, then they make it a big deal about the Zabi family. And so then it's starting to click. But I remember, I think, yeah, my wife was like, and she had watched the series with me, but I don't expect her to remember everything. I just remember when Garma died, she's like, oh, that guy's a traitor. And it's like, yeah, Char's a traitor. But then, like, as the rest of the movie plays out, it's not clear in explaining or even hinting at Char having this sort of background to take out the rest of the family. You know,
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and but if you already have seen the series, it you know what's going. It's like a cool truncated version of the beginning of the series. So it makes sense. If it's interesting to think in Japan that Gundam at first wasn't popular enough, the series, so they had to cancel it, and then they brought back the movie, but then that was super popular. When it's like, okay, did people get to go back and watch the series? Because it actually, it there's way more going on. And for an English speaker, the fact that the series is in English helps a whole lot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's been a while since I've watched the movies. That's a very good point, like, that there is so much context missing from what you would expect. But, you know, I think that that's one of, if we're going to be honest about, like, the criticisms around Gundam, one of the weaknesses of all Gundam series is that they tend to be a little bit self-referential.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about the opening few episodes of Zeta Gundam, everybody's, yeah, talking about Char this, Char that, Red Comet. Oh, this guy looks like the Red Comet. It's like, if you had never watched Gundam and you jump in here,
it's like, yeah, especially
care. What's the
yeah, especially when it's like he senses Camille and he's like, Amuro, you know, Quattro. Like, yeah. And if you've ever watched, you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? Why would he sense him? And then why would he then say someone else's name? You know, but that's the thing. I kind of like that on some level, because it's like the artist is almost like, we know we made something cool, here's the follow-up to that.
Yeah.
And I guess it's more of a chance a company would make, and they knew they could do that with Gundam because it was so popular. But
now, what do you think? So this is kind of a question around the movie craft of the first Gundam movie. Since you just watched it again, you know, you look at like something like the Star Wars trilogy, where you knew that the story was going to keep going after Luke Skywalker destroyed the Death Star, right? Does the Gundam movie, the first one, really have that kind of like resolution at the end of it? Like you said, it kind of just,
it keeps it open-ended, because then you're like, okay, now all the Zabi family are coming together.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, but we were introduced to the Char guy from the main guy from the beginning of the movie is Char, but then by the end it's almost like he's not a big deal, and then and I know why, but yeah, then it's just they're really focusing on the Zabi family, and so yeah, it's like, it's more like, okay, then I guess for the sequel we're gonna just see them go after the Zabi family, you know. They do the one mention of the new type, and it's, you know, when they run into Matilda. Which, yeah, that's also super truncated, but I realized it helps because she, you know, she doesn't die until the second one.
Yeah.
So that means you might forget all of the non discussions they had building up their characters, because there was only a few. Although they did the right scenes, the scenes they did between Amuro and Matilda were like, for instance, he was staring at her, and then Fraubo is sticking her tongue out at him.
Yeah.
So that is a good scene to show to kind of understand what's going on there.
And, you know, it goes back to that thing that we talk about sometimes, where it's good to have a break between watching like episodes. Oh, I think that by having that break, you almost kind of imply that relationship kept growing, you know, because, yeah, like I think about if you were to think about most movie trilogies, most like any kind of sequels, there really is like that kind of gap where, well, like, shoot, even between like Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, huge gap.
Huge gap.
Where they make a whole series.
Right. Yeah, they made a whole series to fill it in. And it's basically because they had to build up that relationship that Obi-Wan and Anakin had. Because before that, you know, it was this like just master pupil relationship. But the friendship and the betrayal that happens towards the end of Revenge of the Sith, that didn't that would not have had the impact if it had just happened right after the events on Geonosis, right?
Just
so it's like having that break in the movie where it's like, oh, so they probably spent like months together, Matilda and Amuro and the White Mage crew, and then
You made me think, is how cool would it have been if after Attack of the Clones they then did seven seasons of Clone Wars and then did Revenge of the Sith? I think that would have been so much more impactful, that relationship between Obi-Wan and I was about to say Char, but might as well be. That's pretty cool. I see Robert press buffering. You might see the camera freeze, but it has nothing to do with the stream. There's just been some camera freezing, but I mean, the audio is still good. So, and real quick, Gregory is asking two good questions that we're going to be covering here shortly.
Yeah.
So, about the Phantom game and TCG. So thanks for bringing that up. Real quick to put a cap on the movie thing. Part two and part three are going to be coming out. I think I'm going to go anyway, because I guess to then be positive, actually, it did feel like a warm blanket just sitting in there and just list. The other thing, too, is the music is good in the movie, but not as good as the series music. And it's very few and far between. Most of the movie has no music. They did like, you know, the recognizable music at the beginning when Amuro was fighting the Zakus. And then they used like the movie specific tracks, and it is not the same, but it's still good stuff. If it was still cozy to watch. And the other thing I think I was telling you, because we were going to talk last night, but the movie was so long, I forgot about that. These movies are actually over 2 hours.
It's always surprising sometimes when you realize that, like, some movies, you look at the runtime, it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes, and you're just like, was it really that? Because, like, I don't remember sitting that long for that movie.
Depending on the movie. You know, this is so fun. I got to bring up unlocked memory. Okay.
Uh-oh.
This is in elementary school. I remember we had to take a quiz or a test on something, and for some reason, one of the questions was, how long is the average movie? And it was multiple choice. And one of the options was 2 hours. And I picked that. But I was wrong.
What was it, 90 minutes?
Yeah. Which, it's like, okay, if we're talking about like the Disney movies and animated movies. Yeah, but that by that time in the 90s, they were coming out with these 2 hour blockbusters. I always thought that was funny. It's like, is this wrong, really? And I don't question it or challenge it because I'm a kid and I'm dumb. So,
I would have fought that grade tooth and nail.
That would have been funny. So something I want to show off real quick, actually, is here are the supporters at the new type level that make all of this possible. This is a new thing I want to start doing to kind of show that thanks and appreciation. But it's also at this level, like, you can, because this isn't everyone. So if there's someone that has something you want to promote that you're at this level, reach out to me with it. So the links are in the description for everyone here. You probably recognize everyone. Actually, let me remove that so you can see the rest of Signor. Yeah. But so that, you know, shout out to them, Tacoholic, Sig New York, Nonstop Collectors,
Ian Armand, crew right there.
That Steven, Midnight Hatter, if you guys know him, and then Talos Mobius, which him and Alter, if you guys aren't familiar with Alter, do stuff together. So
well, don't say it like that. Like,
he's no one in chat. You know what I mean?
They probably do.
Yeah, he's like no one.
No, so they do create content together, and they're such an awesome pair because like they just bounce off of each other so well. So if you haven't watched any of Talos Mobius's coverage on GBO2, where he's got Alter on in second chair.
Yeah, because they're the type where it's almost like that part of the brain that has the answers to everything is like right on the tip of their tongue. And so it's like back and forth. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But also, oh, so anyway, if you're at new type level and I don't have something up you want to promote, let me know. But also, let me then, now this is a lot of things I'm doing. Okay. Here is something from SIG New York. Actually, they have a partnership with Video Games New York. So that's pretty cool. Check that out at the SIG New York Instagram. They have a link to Video Games New York. I was checking out. They had Dreamcast games on there, which is pretty sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm really excited to see what comes out of that partnership there. And let's face it, those two logos just go together so well.
Oh, like, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
I thought that was like just... so like edgy and cool. I love it.
No, yeah, and it speaks to me. Video games and Gundam, like that's gaming and Gundam, you know, the G's, you know. We're the true G's. I don't know.
GG.GG. I don't know.
Actually, yeah, let's talk about that VR game. So up speaking on my
GG.
yeah, exactly. So up on my channel, if you guys haven't seen it, and you probably don't want to see it now because we're all hanging out, is I uploaded 30 minutes of that VR game. It's pretty cool. The first part of it was me playing the story, which is interesting because you're actually just a fly on the wall watching it. And as the camera position changes, you change with it, which is, it's interesting, but it will be sometimes I'm like, wow, that's neat. And then the camera changes and then I'm like, okay, I'll just reorient. There are parts then that are gameplay, like where, but this is kind of the cool stuff. You know, when you take those lifts down the hallways, there's a scene where you have to grab the lift and then you're going down the hallway because, you know, the gravity. And it's kind of cool to.
Isn't it weird? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm more excited about doing in Gundam than like piloting a mobile suit. It's like, I just want to like
things that are part of the world. Yeah. So here's the other one, the hook shots. I forget what they're called, but like,
yeah,
they're it's on the wall and I'd pick it up and then shoot where you're supposed to go. Unfortunately, it's like predetermined points, but you know, still it's kind of cool. Then you get your mobile suit, turn it on. The real cool thing about it too is, oh, my handles are over there. It's the, you know, the quest handles and you hold them but down, like, you know, you're in, you know. So, and I didn't get too far into the story. Again, it was on my lunch break when I set this up and hit record. And I wanted to try more of the gameplay stuff. I will say, as cool as it is, there's something that maybe as I play it more, I will understand the point of this. But this is the most weirdest thing that they've decided to do. And maybe I can give them feedback. Is what's cool is you're holding those two handles. And then as you move your head out the window, you see the gun moving with your head, like where you're aiming.
Oh, interesting.
But what's interesting is to shoot. And at first I was like, okay, we'll see how this goes. You go forward on the joystick and it shoots. But then like what you do is after you shoot, you want to pull back fast. I was messing up to reload. So I was like shooting. And then when they said reload, I'd pull back and they're like, you messed up. And I'm like, okay, I'll pull back. And like, and then I didn't realize, okay, I got to shoot back. And I'm like, wait a minute. Just like Amuro did in the first Gundam, I should just be pushing the thing on the side to shoot. Why am I going like that with my fist?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that should be, you know, forward acceleration, you know.
Like, it is like at a predetermined point. It's almost like the moving is like contextual. And
yeah,
again, maybe it will open up and get better. But just that one thing where I have to look and then go forward to shoot makes no sense. They need to patch in where it is that would be the A button or B button on the controller. Just
I don't see why they wouldn't, right? Like that's.
Unless they were just wanting to double down on it being gimmicky. They're like, oh, let's make it as motion. No. We want to feel like it's like I'm in the cockpit. I'm seeing my hands on the controls. I want to press the button to shoot, not just, okay, I gotta watch my video.
Like, are these Nintendo designers like low key? Like, but like from the Wii era, like not
exactly. Not I know. We're I know exactly. Where nothing really made sense on how to, but really I'm loving this. And when it comes to the story, there's this other part I'll talk about. I'm loving the story, but they need to tweak that. Now the other mode I played, and there's three, I think, and I didn't play the third one, but this other mode I loved. And this is the one you guys have probably seen in a video, and it's at the end of my video. It's where, Like it starts, I did the first level. It had an RX-78 II model in front of me, which was highly detailed and looked excellent. And you go with your hand and then you hold in the button to hold it, right? Nice. And then the trigger shoots his gun. So they're actually doing that, right? So then I'm flying around all these enemies and I'm like shooting, like aiming, shooting, and then pressing like the missile. I'm having to get like extra missiles and all that. And then the other good thing they did was on the joystick, forward on the joystick slashes. So I go up close slash and I can pull back, but it's like the best of being a kid with your toy. And I guess I do that today.
Yeah, you know,
yeah, exactly. We're still doing all that stuff. and it feels like that. It really, like, that's what makes it fun, but also it does it where it's the see-through, pass-through. So I see my room and it just makes like holes in the ceiling where you see space.
That's pretty good.
So they're coming in.
Real experience where, well, it's like, you know, you're kind of looking at the floor.
Yeah. So, you know, what's really cool is if someone designed their room to maybe look like a Gundam diorama somehow, and then turned that on and played, it would look actually pretty neat. Like, I'm super impressed.
So that's got to be the direction that they're going for, like, you know, metaverse type Gunpla interaction, right?
Very good point. I feel like that's because the way I was playing it was real time reaction. It was it's like I was involved, unlike that part I was talking about in the game where I'm just doing this to shoot, reload. What am I doing? No, actually being able to pull the trigger and I'm like dodging shots. But it's what's cool is it's not attacking me. It's attacking, you know, my hand, which when I'm watching it, I just see, you know, my Gunpla and I'm shooting. And I'm sure there's more Gunpla to unlock. It was just the RX-78 II. But I could totally see myself doing this where it's like I need to get that Gundam fill. So I'll just hop in and do a survival wave and just pick up my favorite mobile suit and do all the attacks. That part they nailed, especially because it's $15. So it's like, I feel in that 30 minutes I played, I got my $15 worth. Assuming you already bought the headset, which is expensive. Although they released a cheaper model.
Yeah, I heard about it. Well, yeah. Actually, you told me about that.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So now tell me, are you still suffering from the VR sickness?
So I don't think so. I think it's because when you're playing the game or when you're playing the movie, it's really not too jarring. It's pretty chill, especially like as it moves and it's slow and you can sit. And then when I'm doing the Gunpla, it's pass through. So I'm kind of like seeing my room anyway. So okay. I think I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's something to appreciate is they really nailed the comfort level. So yeah, that's a good point. In my opinion, again, I just played 30 minutes, and if I paid 15 to go somewhere and I played 30 minutes of a Gundam VR, I thought that was worth my time. This is definitely worth it. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah, you know, that was something that they had at the Gundam base, but at least at my location, the VR was down like for a good chunk of the day. So it was like, oh well, I guess nobody's going to get to do that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder, but yeah, so. So what I'm going to do is like on my channel right now, I said, I have the first 30 minutes of me just playing around. My plan is I'm going to finish the story and I'm going to make a video about the story. The thing is when I uploaded that video, there were four sections that I had to cut the audio. I put it in the description, yeah. You know, so I might not really, cause it's a lot of work. It's like, here's the thing. It's not that I need to monetize it, but they will monetize. That was the main thing I saw, and I didn't like that. They're like, you know, the copyright holder is going to get money from this video. And I'm like, that's not right. Like, I'm marketing this for them, so I'm kind of not cool with that. So it's either I can monetize it but I'm not going to let them monetize it.
Exactly. It's such a... And you know, not to get all inside baseball, but it's, you know, one of the struggles around content creation is skating that line where it's like, you know, no, I'm not necessarily creating this video in order for me to make money off of it, but like, the idea is that like someone else shouldn't be profiting from your work, especially when your work is
promoting,
helping to sell their thing to then make them more money, right? Like, are you not making money on the game that you have to make money off of people playing it?
Yeah, I know. And the other thing too is I would assume this isn't popular just because in my normal video game circles online, no one is talking about Gundam VR.
I mean, nobody in general
talks about Gundam.
Nobody talks about Gundam video games in general.
I mean, Gundam Breaker, you know, I have my gaming YouTube channel where I talk about games Monday through Friday. In the news articles and any of the research, no one ever talks about Gundam Breaker. Like, it's just, it's very niche. And so I'm hoping talking about this Gundam VR would kind of get people interested because the story is pretty cool. And like, especially when a battle is happening in the story, how the camera will move and then start doing like the angles. And it's like, okay, this is neat. So
it's pretty cool.
But I will have then a lot of videos up of like me doing the gameplay of the survival mode with the Gunpla, because that's fun. I can see myself recording that. And it's really cool because with the MetaQuest, it's as easy as you hit cast in the settings and then you just go to a website and then it detects it because I guess you're on the network and then it's on the Meta or Oculus website. It just shows what you're doing.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny.
What's the third mode then?
Because you said sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the third mode, I didn't try it yet, but it seems cool. It's where you can actually, you have a collection of model kits that you can like display in your room and look at. I think that's just a cool way if you wanted to like really get into the details and look at a model kit, especially if you want to do a custom or like, let's say you don't have a high grade. Cause you know how I talk about sometimes you build a model kit and then you feel like you have a deeper connection to its design.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this allows you to do. So yeah, again, when I was saying it's worth $15, I didn't even do that. And you know, so
you got $15 out of 60% of the product.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty cool. So I got to hand it to them. It's a mix of the guy that made Gundam Evolve and a French VR studio. And I think that really came together well and made some cool. I hope they switch in game in the story mode. You don't do this to shoot. It takes me out of the experience of me watching this Gundam show I'm part of. It's bizarre. I feel like the people that were testing it didn't know Gundam.
Yeah. You know, it's
that would have came up.
And you know, they have those pods in Japan of like the, you know, that you can sit and pilot a mobile suit, like the arcade game. So it's like, you would think that they would have kind of taken some of the inspiration from that and basically tried to VRify that experience.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's a VR show you could watch, but they have the VR modes that have normal gameplay, but within the VR show, it's gimmicky stuff. It's very interesting. All right, so we're going to move on. Another thing I'm going to promote here real quick, and I think it's going to be worth it for you guys, is Art Rovo Gundam. Hopefully you can see that. There's a link in the description. So this is a new store. This guy is into Gundam, and he wants to like start a store. So he's right now got a bunch of stock, and he's hoping, you know, one day to make it even bigger. So he's doing a deal with me right now, the link in the description, where if you buy two items, you get free shipping. Now, and to let you guys know, I'm not getting anything out of this right now, because the idea is if I'm going to start doing sponsorships, kind of want to see how it goes. I want to, you know, this guy seems really cool. So it's almost like I kind of want to help him. And then if it seems like that's working out, then it could be that he's a sponsor and that just helps the show out even more. So,
I mean, that logo alone is pretty freaking awesome.
I know. It's cool. It's like a very unique looking Gundam, you know? So check the link in the description for that. And he was talking about getting more stock here pretty soon. So if maybe there's something that sold out, I think he's getting it back in. Also, to me, it seemed like the prices were good. But if you guys have any feedback about that site, reach out to me. And because he's wanting feedback as he builds this up.
And I mean, to be honest with you, like just kind of on a personal note, like small business owners like this, like I'm all about supporting them over, you know, feeding the big Amazon beast. So it's like, you know, you're already going to be paying better prices to, you know, a gentleman like this from Art Rovo than.
Yeah. And just knowing that there's more people that like Gundam so much that they want to start their own store, even if there is a store already, but it's like, hey, maybe I can have a store and have a unique experience. And so I think that's, you know, him and I working together, maybe through the community here, the viewers of Gundam Explained, we can help make that the ultimate Gunpla store, which would be cool.
Hey, more Gundam is never a bad thing.
I know. And you know, also, and I'll remove this as I say this, also the P-Rex hobby in there for those in Canada that want to be able to get some Gunpla. I'm making sure helping out my Canadians there. I'm going to try to help my Australians since they're the ones most affected by Gundam. They don't even have an easy way maybe to get their Gunpla. by the way. So in, it was so cool in the chat in Discord, there was a lore channel in the Discord and someone brought up like, what would the devastation really be of the colony drop? And I was like, oh, I've thought about this before. And so I like went and got some AI generated answers based on like the younger Dryas impact hypothesis, just because there's evidence of something that impacted. And I was like, you know what? That's a good video idea. So I think I'm going to have a video here pretty soon where I kind of explain what would the colony drop impact actually be on the planet. And what would the real story be of the Federation versus Zeon after that?
And you have to think it happened how many times?
Oh, yeah. And then so that's the thing. I really feel like after this first time, it wouldn't happen ever again because it would be so devastating unless it was more of the space noids being like, yeah, let's just totally the thing Char always wanted to do, you know?
And honestly, I'm looking forward to this video so much because, I have my conspiracy theory about like whenever people talk about the Earth's elite and stuff like that. But then when you actually see what Earth looks like in Gundam, it's like, sucks. Like all the cities are bombed out. Like it seems like everybody's living in poverty. And yet somehow there's like this propaganda upheld about how great Earth is and like only the top politicians live there.
Well, so I'm glad you brought that up because that's another interesting thing about that the movie actually did well is because anytime there was dialogue between like the Zabbies or other Zeon officials are always like, oh, we're gonna have this banquet. And then there's the banquet with Garma and Iselina. Yep. Am I pronouncing that right? Iselina?
Yeah.
Iselina. Okay. And what's interesting, because it's truncated, you're getting a juxtaposition of a devastated city wasteland. Like, no building is intact. And then people inside at a banquet. And then the white base is out there hiding in this wasteland. And then they're in the banquet. The Zeons are like, okay, let's go fight. It's like, but what was interesting, the Iselina's father that was there doesn't support Zeon, or doesn't care to support Zeon, but he is there for the people that the city has destroyed, so he's almost just trying to save face in front of. So they did a really good job.
That's one of the fascinating things about that relationship is like, you know, this guy is basically marrying his daughter off into the Zabi family in order to like just as a way of currying favor with the family because he sees which way the war is going. And it's so funny because, my wife and I just got done. It was like a few weeks ago watching through a Band of Brothers again. And like, there's all those scenes of, Nazi sympathizers in like, in the Netherlands and stuff. And like people like shaving their heads and like beating them in the streets and stuff like that. And it's like, that's what the Federation would have done to this guy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And that reminds me too, because anytime there's only a few times in the movie one where you're engaging with where the good guys are engaging with the Federation. That's mainly when they're docking. But when Amuro goes off to find his mom, the Federation are a-holes. Like they really did a good job of that. When it's not like the main core, it's like, you don't like the Federation, you know? And it's very interesting because again, those are those things where if someone's not used to storytelling, like if someone is used to storytelling tropes, but then they see a show where the good guys are acting bad a lot, you might be confused and be like, oh, those Zeon too? And it's like, no. When what's interesting is, even though they were right there, that the church he goes to, the people there were worried about Zeon coming. It's like, well, the Federation's right there. And because, they were right there at the front lines, but kind of playing chicken. So that's interesting, and it kind of another good point about watching Gundam 1. If you're a good Gundam fan, it kind of goes through those motions in a quick way so you can kind of re-engage with those subtleties in the story.
Yeah, but not all subtleties. Yeah. It does. Yeah, I would say that, like I said, it's been a while since I've seen the movies, but I think that it hits the main beats very well.
Especially if you already have the context of Gundam. It does. Yeah. Okay. The other thing, and actually, Gregory brought this up. Oh, hey, Lucas Garrett, good to see you. Glad you joined. Yeah, thanks for the comment on the VR video. So this other thing that's interesting, and let me switch to it. So this is something I shared in the Discord a couple days ago when they announced it. Because remember, there was like an announcement of a trading card game coming soon.
Yeah.
Well, it went up for sale apparently today, and I didn't know that was going to happen. And then it sold out immediately.
Dude, which, I want to get on this so bad.
Yeah, same here. That's cool that you're saying that. Because so here's the thing. Pre-orders open October 3rd. Today's October 3rd. The idea was the pre-orders would close October 27th. I hope this just means this is them gauging it, and then they're going to have some more. Because for me, I've never been a trading card game player, but in the 90s, I collected cards of Ninja Turtles. You know, the Marvel, remember the X-Men and Marvel cards? That was such a big deal. The Batman Forever. I got the trigger. Oh, and Batman Returns. Like, I got the memory unlocked. But and so seeing the artwork on here too, that's not it. It's just cool. Like, I guess this just speaks to, you know, the things I'm into when I grew up, but I love having like a card that I can look at with awesome artwork on it, you know, especially when like new ones come out. And I would assume that's how it works. You get this base and then there's new packs, you know, and then it would be cool. Yeah. If I get into the game from that, but I just love looking at like the artwork, you know, as,
I mean, dude, even the logo design is so freaking awesome.
I know, because it's like the Federation star in a way, but
it looks like a Federation shield, but also a card.
Okay, yeah. And you know what? I was about to say, does that mean this is mainly Universal Century? But it confirms here no, because we see the Archangel here, Archangel, and then the Wind Gundam. So that's okay. Dice. So they're really thinking this out. Again, I haven't played a trading card game before.
I've never played a, well, I guess I have played a trading card game with dice, but I mean, I still got probably between 600, 700 Dragon Ball Z card game cards in my garage. I still have one of my Yu-Gi-Oh decks, but sadly not all of them.
Is the Dragon Ball game something that's still popular at all?
The one that I have was retired and they created a new one.
Oh, okay. Interesting. But that's the other cool thing, I guess, about having these cards is just the artwork. Like, I love having that, looking at it. So I'm hoping this goes on sale again. If this, the second that I see that it's available to buy, I'll let everyone know. Or if anyone hears, let me know.
Yes, please.
This is a cool thing. This is a cool thing. All right. The other thing we're going to look at, actually, and let me share this. This is cool. This is, I was talking about that submission. Yeah. Let me go to this one. If anyone's got a Gunpla they're proud of, and actually let me make a smaller. If you got a Gunpla you're proud of and you want to show it off, the Gunpla Collectibles Discord channel. There's a pinned comment with a form, or just reach out to me if you can't find it. This is from Rogue New Type, you know, supporter of the channel, long time. He's had a video, so if you want to go back and look at his previous work, some other stuff there. So this is the MS-08 TXV Efreet Vulcan Renegade Zeon's Close Combat Mobile Suit. So
I love the box art. This.
Oh, yeah, I know. I love that stuff. And actually, let me move this over a second so you see that. Yeah, that's
high-grade logo in there.
Okay, so let me read this. The kit is the high-grade UC Efreet Schneid. Build details are Heat Trident from Build Fighters Ballistic Weapons Pack. Shoulder Spikes from Goof R35. Arm Machine Gun from Goof R35. Sturmfoss from High-Grade Camphor. Side Leg Armor with Spike is Scratch Build All. Heat kunai have been replaced with grenade canisters. Red is incendiary, gray is smoke. Story. This MS is from my fanfic story, Mobile Suit Gundam Ex Machina, another story you see, which takes place between 0082 through 89. And I was thinking real quick, 82 through 89 is probably a good time period to make a story. You know, there's not.
Dude, it's too much. What I'm always saying. It's like, yeah, we need more stories in that timeline.
Yeah. So this suit belongs to Gents. It could be Gents, but I'm going to say Gents, the supreme commander of his fleet of renegade Zeon remnants who no longer follow the ideals of organized Zeon remnants throughout the Earth sphere. So that's a kind of a neat idea. I can see over time the Zeon remnants, certain splinter factions could be like, yeah, let's kind of do our own thing because it's not one unified thing. I think it's very easy.
I mean, even if you think about it, like, dude, I could totally see him leading like the red faction because like in Double Zeta, you know how you have the blue unit?
Oh, yeah.
And the blue unit, they obviously were not loyal to Haman because they set up Glemmy as they were like, hey, you know, you should be running Zeon.
Right.
Same deal here with Gens. Like, this is.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because that then further gives that nuance to Double Zeta that's almost hidden. But it's there. So Gents is one of the main antagonists constantly combating with our main protagonist group. Gents uses this custom efreet until he switches to a stolen Gundam type suit. So that's cool. So yeah, let's look at some other, there we go. Some other shots there.
This is awesome photography too.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. These are his shots that he sent over. And you know, that's really cool to, and I didn't think about this until looking at this now. Like, I like to do photography, but I always have trouble with the ground because it can always look fake. But this looks just like maybe the cement or stone, maybe like a fence, but the patina of whatever you call the moss. I think there's a different word for it that grows on there actually kind of gives it a more realistic. For that scale.
I mean, this is a great tip for people who are just getting into Gunpla photography. Go outside.
Oh, like, yeah, that is.
I say it jokingly, but like, seriously, the lighting outside is so much easier to get better shots out of than trying to set up lighting inside and get that kind of stuff. Take your Gunpla outside, and then like he did with that one shot where he's kind of standing on that, like you said, on that fence. That if you get that low angle, that's how you get that effect where it's like, oh, it looks like a real mobile suit. Like, it's huge because the horizon line of your photo is so much higher. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, yeah, there's actually a lot now that you're talking about it, because like, there's the harsh lighting, the contrast, the shadows too, like looking at that shadow. But also I was looking at the paint on the tubing. That just looks, looks good.
I mean, it's such a cool detail that like the different grenades have different like designations, you know, and I love that that's noted in the story.
Yes. You know, and so it's funny. It's like, what if, you know, like in the future, you know, the Gundam people are like, okay, we need some new stories. It's like, hey, there's this guy or there's, you know, the fan fiction that people write, sometimes it's like pretty good and detailed, even if, okay, we can't do that story, but these details you wrote about this character are actually really good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, cause I could see Bandai being like, well, we have an idea for the overall story, but these are good characters, you know, that's, you know, but they do pretty good anyway. And I guess I was kind of thinking Star Wars in my head because it's really the problem with Star Wars. Bandai does a good job with their characters.
And maybe that's it. It's because Bandai doesn't let any fanfic through. And
okay, that's pretty good, actually. That's pretty good.
No, I can't.
Even though,
obviously, F91 is fanfic, but.
Oh, my God. No, but you know what? In a way, it is. It's Tomino wanting to make the Star Wars.
It's Tomino's fanfic
of Star Wars. Yeah, I really do think that. I think
we're on to something with that.
Yeah, I totally think so. Especially maybe after War in the Pocket, he's like, well, all right, if these guys are going to do this, I'm going to my Star Wars I wanted to do. Because, yeah, there was that. I keep thinking about that vinyl record of the first Gundam vinyl record. There's an interview where he cites George Lucas. And I'll always remember that. I think that's incredible. It's 1980. Yeah. All right. Did I? You know what? That's all I have. But I know there's so much more we could talk about. So let me get back to our mainstream. So yeah. Yeah. What else to tell you? I talk too fast, people. I talk too fast.
Well, you know, it's been just such a, we've been spoiled for Gundam content this week because of the release of Silver Phantom, the movie coming out, the card game being announced. And then, like, we've also got a whole bunch of new Gunpla and collectibles being announced. The one thing that you're going to be surprised that I'm not getting, well, maybe if you knew that I'm broke, then you know that I'm not getting it anyway, but like the Metal Build Zeta that's for sale now.
Okay, where can you buy it right now? Or can you? I think it's sold out everywhere, isn't it? No, Google, I wasn't asking you. I'm going to look it up real quick because
I'm sure it's still available. I saw some ads on Instagram, and it's worth checking out, like, you know, the hobby shops and seeing who's got them still available. But
here's the thing. Like, that's something I would get. But, like, I feel like recently I bought the Verka Metal Robot Spirits. And then they're coming out with, aren't they coming out with the Veranime? And then we just got the Verka Master Grade. And so it's like, how many Zetas do you need, especially when you just complain about them all the time?
that's my thing is, you know, we need some more Zetas in the traditional, you know, Okawara and that proportion, because I think the problem is we get a lot of Zetas in the Verka style, the Verka proportions, but man, like, I would kill for more high grade or master grade scale Zetas that are in the same proportions as the perfect grade, because the perfect grade has like thick legs, it looks, you know, a little bit beefier.
I'm going to be interested when that Veranime of the Zeta comes out, because I have that original one, and it's like, are they really going to do it? I almost feel like no, because I do feel like
if I do get a Robot Spirits, that'll be the one.
Yeah. Because I do feel like early, and I say early, but I just mean in terms of like a lot of the main key art of the Zeta is either the Okinawa or it's the really sleek look, which sometimes you don't realize you're seeing two different, you know, versions.
I think that the like definitely the harsher angled version became more prominent during Double Zeta.
I get that sense, and I think that in general is the direction mecha design went in the 80s, because you went from bulbous, blocky things, very sleek, jagged, edgy. And, you know, I saw that as it went. And it's very interesting because I think a lot of it might have accidentally came about from Macross using like F-18 style jets.
Exactly.
Because then that jet look was really cool with, with mechs.
Which is funny because, you know, when we talk about like the origin of mecha, and I'm sure, you know, Ollie Barter would disagree with us, but, you know, there's people that suggest that like mecha is basically the idea of like walking tank, right? Mm-hmm. And so early mecha designs tend to be more of that walking tank style design. But yeah, like you said, when Macross came along, you know, there came this sort of shift towards, well, maybe they're not tanks, maybe they're aircraft. And I think that it's very telling, you know, when I look through a lot of like the machine translated, Gundam materials that I have, almost always mobile suit is translated to aircraft.
Yeah, I remember we went through that before. Okay, so you do bring up something very interesting, because I've always liked mechs. And to me, it was a tank, a walking tank. Like the Power Loader was kind of like the earliest of like, man, that's badass. You know, and then up until like Lost Planet, you know, but I think the thing then that triggered me with Gundam was seeing it as a jet fighter. I think that was the turning point, because I think one of the earliest, again, this is when I first got into Gundam, which, you know, by most standards wasn't too long ago. I always think of the, it might be Verka artwork, I don't know, of the Victory. Because there's the way the Victory looks, it looks like a jet fighter, like in a way, like Blue Angels.
Yeah, I mean,
is what I think, because I like the Blue Angels growing up. So that is interesting, because I've never really delineated that interest of mech, of the robot tank and then the sort of jet robot.
And even sort of the culture around like mecha in the various Gundam anime, you know, it tends to go towards that like cocky fighter pilot, you know, that type of culture. I mean, everyone always compares 0083 to Top Gun, right? Because you get that same sense. I never got that comparison. I think that that's one of those comparisons that, because if you think about Top Gun, like Top Gun, they're training pilots that are in a training center. Like they're not actively in a fight until the very end. Whereas 0083, yes, they are training pilots, but like almost immediately in the first episode, they become, you know, actual soldiers. No, so the comparisons to Top Gun are very, I would say, stretched, but
yeah, for me, the Top Gun comparison is just the way the main character looks, the girl looks, the way they're wearing their flight jackets and everything kind of has that Air Force feel. That's for exactly me where the Top Gun, because otherwise, yeah, even the plot or whatever, you know, is not necessarily, you know, it's just.
It's more Broken Arrow than Top Gun.
Yeah, that's a really good one, which again, it shows how cool that plot really is, because sometimes you could miss what the real plot is when you're just kind of looking at, oh, what the character's getting into. Oh, it's a bad guy with a nuke. But really it's like, oh no, that's a stolen nuke.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a bad guy with a stolen nuke. And yeah, it's pretty good. Well, that brings up something. What's another, like other movies or other genres? And we've probably talked about this before, that Gundam could really be doing, or, and not necessarily genres, maybe movies that had specific, like here's one I came up with recently. I mean, I think we've talked about this in a way, you know, we've talked about like Timothy Dalton. He's my favorite James Bond.
Same here, man.
Yeah. License to Kill was cool because it kind of had where he was pretending to be this other guy working up through the ranks, assassinating everyone. That's Shar Aznable. Yeah. That's what he did in the first Gundam. I never really connected it, but that's what makes that very compelling plot or story is that character that is being a fabrication throughout the story. He's not himself, even though the audience knows he is, but or the viewer knows, but for the characters in the story, that's like another layer. And then murder.
Yeah, you know? Dude. I probably said it before, but The Departed, but Gundam.
Oh yeah.
Like I've probably mentioned that there's a comic book called Sleeper by Ed Brubaker and illustrated by Sean Phillips. Fantastic comic book series. But it's a superhero one where it's like a superhero infiltrates a group of supervillains, and his handler at the agency that he works for is put into a coma. And so nobody knows that he's actually a superhero, and he has to like keep doing villain things in order to stay alive. So it's like, imagine a Federation pilot who infiltrates a Zeon group, but whoever his handler was, something happens to them. They're incapacitated for whatever reason. He can't get out, but then he also can't reveal that he's a Federation pilot.
Yeah, I like that because I love the tension.
Yeah.
Because I loved that part in War in the Pocket, you know, when he's talking about what the time of the weather in Australia at the time of year, and like when the reveal like that. Yeah, that is
really cool. Oh, it's so good.
Okay, what are in the past? Can you think in the past 20 years some good action movies? Like, oh, and I've brought this up, like a Fast and the Furious, but Gundam.
Fast and the Furious Gundam. I mean, my favorite like 90s action movie is Demolition Man.
Oh, okay. So because in the Gundam universe, I believe they could have someone that's cryo frozen. If you think about
they have clones.
I was about to say, and even aren't the clones in a sort of stasis too?
Because I assume so. They have to be
at some point. Especially because they're accelerated birth in a way. So it makes me think, what if some guy put himself in some stasis, but who knows for what reason? And then, it's more of it's a different. Yeah, what if it's someone during 0079? They're like, oh no, something's gonna happen. Okay, what if it's the first new type? That's the name. It's called the first new type or the last new type. playing Last Samurai. Anyway, okay. it's the first Yuta, and like the Federation knows the Zeon's experimenting. They're like, okay, we've got this new type. We don't know how the war's going to go. We're going to freeze you and get you when we need you. And then let's just say something happened and he never got unthawed until, and it could be something like 93, 94.
Yeah.
Which would be cool because then he's like seeing where the mobile suit landscape has gone. But like he would be more of a traditional old school new type. And maybe there's something about old school new types that are different. Like even during that time period, maybe, and this is something I don't even know. Maybe this could be another discussion. Like, are new types ever like persecuted, really? You know, we don't really see that, but I feel like that could be happening.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because they always kind of play at that idea, especially like in narrative where it's like, ooh, you know, we're scared of new types. We don't like them. But it's like, you know, where's the New Type Registration Act or like, you know, the new type camps? Like,
And even by Hathaway, don't they say they learned about them in school? That might have been actually Shark's Counterattack, or they just talked about like surface level, like a little bit of new type information. I think there's some storytelling that could be done that doesn't necessarily negate what's already happened, where it could be some new type persecution. And it would be cool if this guy comes about during this where he's like, yeah, I don't know. There's something there. There's something there.
Yeah.
Oh, Robert saying Battlestar Galactica.
I mean, you still need to finish it, right? Like the
yes.
remake from, yeah.
I still need to finish it. That's right. I think I stopped it. Like I'm on season 2 episode something. I forget. Yeah, I need to continue.
I mean, it's understandable. You've got Gundam movies to watch
and Gundam
VR to play. Like there's
and IBO. You know, I'm going through IBO also.
Yeah.
But well, cool. Yeah, well, I think that's about it. I'm glad we had some interesting things at the end because I actually want to expand on some of these ideas.
I know. Hey, it's like the last 10 minutes of every show, I try to plant an idea in you that's like...
it's perfect because I really like some of these things that came up. But no, yeah, thanks everyone that joined. And also shout out again to all the supporters that make this possible, especially at the new type level. Again, if you're at the new type level and I didn't put the thing up, let me know. And then Art Rovo Gundam, make sure to check out that link because you can buy two things and get free shipping this month, which is pretty awesome. So, and then also give us feedback. Oh man, you know what? I got to read these because people are taking their time. Jim Killex, imagine The Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones and Benicio del Toro, with mobile suit, an elite MS pilot unhinged and started hunting people in a certain region and an instructor has to stop him. That is a great idea. Because it's like Quest almost like was on that edge of being that, but it never went full on.
And that seems like it would be something like tied into Exam or Hades. Like,
yes. Yeah. That's another good point. Cause they could dive into that. And then Fulcrum, imagine a cool Gundam side story. That's like OG Blade Runner esque neo-noir where someone is investigating corruption inside Flanagan Institute. So, okay. And there's cyber new type rights plot. Like, I've thought about that before, and I love this idea.
How do you know you're not a detective? You're not a cyber new type detective.
So that is cool. I mean, like it's cool that someone else is saying this because it's like I was talking about the new type persecution. I think there's cool stories that might not necessarily have to do with mobile suits battling, but of the world and what was going on there. So
because isn't that like the irony of Unicorn, right? Is like the only way that the NTD works is if the person using the NTD is a new type. So it's like the irony of hunting new types with new types. Like,
yeah,
that's Blade Runner.
Yeah, I know. That's cool. Good point. That is. So anyway, that was a cool thing to end it on. So thanks a lot, all y'all. And we will talk later. Have a good one.